Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vinivishavahai Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, Adhikarana 3, lesson 13. Krishna can expand himself by his material, spiritual, or marginal energies. By his material energy, he creates this material world made up of earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and ego. By his spiritual energy, he expands himself as Brahman, Paramatma, and the personality of Godhead, as above mentioned. And by his marginal energy, he expands himself as different living beings. Okay, then this point was, the living entities in the conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Then in the purport, by using properly their minute independence, they are liberated, and by misusing it, they become conditioned. You know, very straightforward point. Is that? That those are the two options. That's how you use your independence. Right? It means independence is there, independence will be used. So if you use it for Krishna, you're liberated. If you don't use it for Krishna, you're bound. It's not like there's other options. Right? Like that. Within each of them, then you have so many options. Like how you want to be bound up. That's what kind of metal, if it's gold, silver, or iron, and whether the links are bigger or smaller, or one big, one small, or these kind of things you can do. You want some engraving on your ball, like that. There's different things you can do. By his personal expansion, he is manifested in various forms like Lord Rama, Nrisimhadev, Vishnumurti, and all the predominating deities in the Vaikuntha planets. The separated expansions, the living entities, are eternally servitors. The personal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the individual identities of the Godhead, are always present. Similarly, the separated expanses of living entities have their identities. As fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, the living entities also have fragmental portions of his qualities, of which independence is one. Every living entity, as an individual soul, has his personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul. And by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In either case, he is qualitatively, eternally, as the Supreme Lord is. Right? So the Lord, in his expansions, then he is still always an individual person. And the individual living entities and their being expanded also remain eternally individual. Right? And so they have a fragmental portion of God's qualities, right? So one of them is independence. That's the key one. If it's because all the other qualities, then the natural qualities may be more or less covered, or he gets acquired qualities that are temporary, that are just moving. So many qualities are there, but the one that's important is independence. Because if you're independent, you're bound. If you're not independent, you see yourself as a servant of the Lord, that's natural, right? Then then all the other qualities can manifest in reality, right? As a servant of the Lord, then the natural qualities, the 50 qualities of the soul can manifest, right? And they'll be good. They'll be part of being in the liberated state. But if any of those qualities are manifest in the conditioned state, they only act to bind you, right? So that's why the independent element is what's pulled, right? Because that independence is very much what we're always worried about, right? But the point is once there's independence, then we must come under control, right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say someone is, the element of liberation is there, so someone is acting in a way to try to free themselves from others' control. So in the beginning, then those who participate in this, then they are, you know, the leaders of the revolution and all that, and, you know, they're glorious and all that, until such time as basically liberation is obtained. And then they're just too rough and ready and wild and crazy to actually function within a properly liberated environment. Right? So if they can adjust, great. If they don't, then they're severely sidelined. Right? Just how it works. Right? So the point is if you're situated in one or the other, then you have to be able to cooperate with everybody else. Right? So now the cooperation is just whether it's in connection with Krishna or not. Right? So those who have accepted that cooperation. You understand? So this idea that I'll always be liberated and not be controlled by anything, it doesn't exist. If you want to go out in the forest on your own, then basically you can get as close as possible, but still then you have to put up with the weather and the other animals, right? Because they've also decided that spot in the tree where you're sitting is a great place to be, right? And you weren't there and now they are, right? You know, so you still are not independent. So there's no such thing as actually being independent. There's a sense of it. But now that sense of independence, is it in connection with the Lord or it's not? That's our actual choice. Right. The other point being made is that it's there because everybody is eternally individual. Because otherwise some may complain. When you're conditioned, yes, you have that sense of individuality, but when you're liberated, you don't. Right? But the point is God always has his individuality, we always have ours. In that individuality, there are qualities. Right? So the important one under discussion is independence. Right? So the point is you have to pick, for an identity, you have to pick a sphere. And then you have to work within that sphere. Does that make sense? You know, then within that, then it works. Okay, let's say he picks businessman. Okay, great. So you pick businessman. So that means then you have to dress, talk, and act like a businessman. Right? And then, but at the board meeting, everybody else is sitting there in the three-piece Armani suits. But one guy's there in his cowboy boots, cowboy hat, jeans, and a t-shirt. And you could say, well, that's not the businessman thing. No, it's because he's got so much more money than anybody else, he doesn't care, and nobody can complain. You know what I'm saying? So it still fits in with the thing. But as soon as his money drops and he's dependent upon others, he'll have a suit on. You understand? So you have to fit into something. This idea is, I'll be totally independent whenever I want, however, it doesn't work like that. If you want to be able to cooperate with others, you have to fit into a basic category. Then within that, then you have variety. You know, do you use the pinstripe, or do you use the plain, or do you use the tropical silk, or, I mean, the tropical, or it could even be a silk suit, you know, like that. You know, so, I mean, what kind of tie? Is it black on black? Is it this or that? You know, all these different things, what you do. So there's lots of variety. Do you use cufflinks? You know, it's all these different things. You know, how do you tie your tie? The regular one or that funny odd-shaped one? You know, like that. You know, you could do all these things. Or you can even use a bow tie, right? So you have all these options within. So that's the things where we know, but I won't have options. Because options means opportunity. Right? So we're making it that you have opportunity, but you still have to pick a sphere within that to function. So it's whether it's conditioned sphere or liberated sphere. But it's can't say, no, I'll pick from each what I like. No, because it's like, you know, what I like I'll take from, you know, the reality, and what I don't like in the reality, I'll take that from the reflection. It's exactly the same thing. It's just whether it's real or whether it's illusional. There aren't different options. You know what I'm saying? The option here is that you have to cooperate with authority. Right? In the spiritual world, you have to cooperate with authority. Here, you'll use your senses to, you know, perform activities to get results. There, you use your senses to perform activities to get results. The difference is I'm the controller and enjoyer here, and there, I'm the servant and trying to please Krishna. The mechanics are exactly the same. Right? So then in here is that fragmental parts and parcels means the fragmental, also the qualities. We have the fragmental parts. I mean, the fragmental qualities, or parts of the quality. We have fragmental portion of the qualities of Krishna. There we got it. Okay? So footnote 17. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.24, for a Krishna conscious person who is cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably, the happiness conceived by the karmis, jnanis, and yogis is treated as less than a fig. Right? So you don't even give a fig, right? But now this is that, you know, you don't even give less than a fig, you know, so that really is not worth a whole lot. Right? Kamsa, however, because of cultivating Krishna consciousness in a different way, right, that is, inimically, was uncomfortable in all the affairs of his life. Whether sitting, sleeping, walking, or eating, he was always in danger. Right? Means, in other words, a devotee, because of cultivating Krishna consciousness, material life isn't very comfortable for him. Right? So Kamsa also cultivated Krishna consciousness, but not favorable Krishna consciousness, inimical. So he was still uncomfortable in material life. Right? The one is you're uncomfortable because it's not safe. Because of the loss of Krishna consciousness. Here it's that the Krishna consciousness made him feel not safe. You understand? The mechanics in that always work the same. It's just a matter of, is it favorable to Krishna or it's not? That's the sphere. Because it's that you have, let's say you go into the ballet studio, okay? So it's mirrors, wall to wall. Right? So whatever everybody's doing in the room is happening in the mirror. So it's just a question on, you want to live out in the room or you want to live in the mirror? That's your choice. Right? So that means to live in the mirror means you have to have the premise that no one exists in the room. The mirror is the only thing. So it's not that it's that much better. It's 2D, right? It kind of has the forms and activity. There's no smell, there's no taste, there's nothing to actually engage. You can see some things moving around, but there's no taste in it. You know what I'm saying? But in the real, you can interact, you know, like that, and it'll still be in the mirror, but you know, you don't have to worry about that. So if you're interacting with the people, you don't really care about the reflection. Does that make sense? This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A devotee or atheist also cultivates God consciousness by trying to avoid God and everything. So here, you're even taking it a step farther, you know, of saying that everybody's situated in Brahman, it's just whether you recognize it or not. So Prabhupada's not taking it a step farther. It's everybody is cultivating God consciousness. It's just a matter of whether it's favorable or inimical. That's all. For example, so-called scientists who want to create life by combination of chemicals regard the external material elements as supreme. Such scientists do not like the idea that life is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Because the point is if it's actually science and you're looking at possibilities, it's also possible that, you know, life came from God. It would just naturally, no, but they'll say, no, it can't be. Right? So they always are conscious of God and how he's not supposed to be involved.
In that case, it would end. It's come to a conclusion to the possibility. Make you have to end your study.
Yeah, because then what's okay? If life comes from God, then what's the purpose of it? But if it doesn't come from God, it just happened, you know, spontaneously. Then that means whatever I spontaneously feel is approved. But here, if God created life, then why did he do that? So then you're still doing your scientific research, but now it's on that conclusion. So what is the meaning of life? What is the purpose of life? Why do we exist? You know, why is there the variety? Why is there happiness and suffering? Why, you know, so then it takes on the Vedantic, you know, approach. But then that means then I can't be independent. Right? It's not that I can't think. There's much more to think about and much more detail to think about in the Vedanta than the other. You know? But it can't be whimsical. There actually you have to stick to it being logical. Right? In other words, if I bring up if I say to a scientist something that's just a little bit off of obvious, they'll say, oh, that's not scientific. You know, the chances are too high. You know, like that. Like I say, it's like, I'll take some, you know, at the park I get some helium balloons. The guy has a whole bunch of them, you know, so I'll get from a few guys and then I'll be able to float around the park and, you know, spend my afternoon that way. There's, no, that won't work. Is that, or, you know, they give all kinds of reasons you can't do it. But if I say is that the living entity just decided it wanted to see, even though it doesn't know the concept, and so it developed eyes, then they'll go, yeah, right. Even though the chances in, I think, billions or trillions to one, you know, no casino would ever run with that odds. You know what I'm saying? They just wouldn't run. And no gambler would either. And it's just, who would run with that? But then they'll do, so that means the intelligence is not being applied. It's still the mind. That's why we say mental speculation. Because the accepting and rejecting is on the platform of the mind. And the mind being unimproved, therefore, their acceptance is atheistic. And that makes sense. So they use their logic where they want to. In other words, where they get pleasure from it. And where it won't give them pleasure, then they aren't logical. You know? Because otherwise, it's naturally, it would be obvious. If I can make laws of nature, because I don't say the laws of man, I say the laws of nature. You know, somebody discovered this law, right? So therefore, he's given the name. You know, they would have to agree that, let's say, America was there before America Vespucci ended up over there. It wasn't that as he landed there, it just like, you know, he started a chemical reaction and suddenly all this landmass happened. And that's why, you know, though it's struck from the record, that's why when they did get off the ship, they were actually, you know, so many miles inland because of this chemical reaction, right? You know, so then that was a problem. That's why, you know, it was a problem getting back because the ship was inland and all that. And, you know, isn't it? Right? The thing is, no, the land was already there, so he discovered what's up. So the laws of nature were already there. Man discovers them. But then if it's so consistent, and then the fun part is they have to acknowledge its consistency, that they call it a theorem. Right? The theorem means it's a formula that they can't prove why it works. They have no idea. But they also can't prove that it doesn't work because it always works. Every time they've used it, it's always worked. So there's the possibility, you know, that, you know, you give, what is it, you know, you take a million monkeys and put them in front of a million computers and they all start poking away like this. One of them's going to come up with Shakespeare. Right? Just by odds, you know. So this kind of stuff keeps them happy, you know, just like Buddhists on, you know, if the tree falls and no one's there, does it make any sound? Or, you know, how you say, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? You know, everybody's got their little thing that keeps them busy, you know. So, you know what I'm saying, you know, you come back, you know, you're now, but you come back from the future to protect yourself now because then in the future you won't exist and things like that. And, you know, it keeps people busy, right? It doesn't have any meaning, right? So the idea is that when we say they're mental speculating, that's actually the essential point. We're not saying they're not intelligent. Mayaya Pratijnana means a very intelligent person, but his intelligence is stolen by illusion because when he applies the mind to the intelligent things he's perceived, he doesn't apply it logically. He doesn't take the logical step. He just keeps himself in illusion. Because the logical step is, if there's so much order, and it's so consistent everywhere in the world, and as I look within the universe, that means somebody must have done this, right? I mean, it's called intelligent design.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, that must be an option. Now, if you want to study how this intelligent design is working, nice. You know, if that's what you do for a living, fine. But to say that, despite all odds, no, it can't be. It just has to be some chemicals, right? You know, a lightning bolt. Why did the lightning bolt come out of the sky? Where'd the lightning come from? You know, why is that happening? Why are there clouds? Because we know, you know, the sun's there. You know, how did all that happen? Because it's just all this mist, yes?
Just as on that exact point, that apparently Darwin's, one of his kids died, and he had an emotional experience due to that of loss of faith in God, and that led to it. So I think if you get a lot of these guys, like you said, it's on the mental platform first, they accept that there's no God, and then they apply in faith.
Yeah. That's all it does.
In Darwin's case, especially.
Yeah, that's just a standard. That other guy, you know, why do good things happen to bad people? That was also his son died of that disease where you get, like, every year you get 10 years older. So at 12, he died of old age. He looked like a 90-year-old or 100-year-old person, like that. So then it's like, but he was a rabbi, so he's good. He's doing all the things. So how could this happen to me? So that means there's no God. And, you know, it's like, somehow or another, it's always someone else's fault. You know. So that's why we were, you know, from the discussion yesterday, is due to a lack of wanting to be God conscious and wanting to follow the Vedic rules, then they're born into a situation where that knowledge is not there. You know, you're born into a family in India, you know about karma. It's just automatic. But you're born into a Western family, you may or may not know about karma. You know, it's becoming more popular, but it's not what you would consider as a major element, you know. Not at least in your own life. If someone else is having a problem, then you can point out that it's karma. But if it's your own life, then it generally is not used, unless it's so obvious that you did something wrong. But if it's not so obvious, then generally karma is not taken as the end. Okay. Such scientists do not like the idea that life is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. As clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mam Aivamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta, Bhagavad Gita 15:7. Okay, that's what we're on now, right? The living entities do not arise from a combination of material elements, such as earth, water, air, and fire, but are separated forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can understand the position of the living entity as the separated portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By studying the nature of the living entity, one can understand the nature of the Supreme God, since the living entity is a fragmental sample of Godhead. But because atheists are not interested in God consciousness, they try to be happy by cultivating Krishna consciousness in various unfavorable ways.
Poetical.
Huh? Poetical. Yeah, very poetic. But also bringing in another element. Now, this is 10th canto. You know, so now we're getting, you know, very, very, you know, fine on these points. So Prabhupada's bringing out the point is that there's no one who's not God conscious. It's just a matter of how much they want to cultivate that God consciousness, you know, either as sincerely and favorable or not. But it's the living entity being part and parcel of the Lord, he can't not be conscious of God. Right? And as we were discussing before, even on the Brahman platform, is that everything that we're conscious of in this world is God, right? Because we're conscious of the Brahman. So that's what we're like that. So even there, as we're taking it, okay, the energy of it, but even from what we're discussing here, is the external energy is also expansion of the Lord. So even we're just taking the bricks and the you know, the earth, the water, fire, air, that aspect of being attracted, just the form, not the quality of the form, even that's God. You know? And those forms each has qualities. Earth has qualities, fire has qualities. So those qualities are qualities of the Lord. So we're still attracted by it. So everybody is actually God conscious. It's just whether it's favorable or not. Does this make sense? So it's a very dynamic way of introducing. If you want something far out to introduce into your yoga studio, try this one. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, this is on that point that everything is coming from God. He is He is the material, spiritual, and marginal energies. He expands himself. Right? So that means you can study God by studying the living entity. Right? Just like the material is a reflection of the spiritual, therefore you can understand the spiritual by how the material works. Right? It means it's just the aspect of illusion, that's the point. But the mechanics of it, the qualities of it. But the thing is, the reflection never has the volume and the capacity of the reality. That has to be understood. But you can get an idea from it. You know what I'm saying? That's the idea. You take a small portion. So just like they'll take a portion of something, put it under the microscope, and then from that try to understand the whole. Same way as by understanding the living entity, you can understand God. Because he has all these qualities, he's independent, you know, the nature of life, consciousness. So that means God's like that, but he's unlimited in this. You know, and because of being unlimited in that, that adds some qualities that he'll have that we don't. Lesson 14. It is a mistake, therefore, to conclude that the material world evolves out of its own energy. It is the energy of Sri Krishna. Because right? Otherwise, being dead matter, how would life evolve from it? Right? Combination of chemicals. If that was the case, then at least, you know, every now and again on the news, you know, you'd hear about, they go in and, you know, this latest thing of, you know, life coming out of, you know, they went out for the weekend and they came back and then, you know, that, you know, the bread had turned into something, you know, just, you know, spontaneous like that. Or, you know, does that make sense? Or, you know, in the kid's closet, you know, just all that stuff piled up like that. And then he opened it one day and this thing came out, you know, like that. And so, yeah, right? But it doesn't happen. Otherwise, you know, be in the news now and again. Right?
But the amount of films on it seems it's a hole. It's a big hole.
Yeah, well, it's just... I think it comes from the animal. I think the horror movies come from the animal stuff. Because as a human being, you have all the things that are there, right? But as an animal, you're just doing whatever you're doing. You know, you're thirsty, you look around, you go down to the water hole, you just take your drink, and then suddenly this lion comes out and grabs you. Or, you know, you're sitting there in your home, and then suddenly, you know, under the ground, and suddenly a snake comes in also and decides, nice house. You know, like that, and then your dinner, so hey, it works out, you know. So all these kind of things is that what they're working off of. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So fear is not a human emotion or...
No, fear is a human emotion, but generally most of what they're doing is off of it's subhuman.
Right.
You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, very rare. It's the other thing where... Well, you also have that freaky human, you know, it's like that. You go there and, you know, they come out of the ground, you know, like this, and then you shoot them, do whatever you do, and they just keep coming. You know, that's the fear. You have no control. That's the problem with that is you have no control. Not that, you know, it's caught you. You have no control. You can do whatever you want, you know, like the place on fire, the big fire, and then, well, right, and then it comes walking out of the fire. You know, like that. So, you know, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Like that. But it's always these elements that compromise our control or enjoyment.
So the fascination with fear is subhuman or?
Fascination, it's natural. Eating, it is. It's animal. Mm-hmm. So eating, sleeping, mating, and defending as the prominent interest is subhuman. It's part of the human, because as being a living entity, it's part of.
But
to cultivate that exclusively or make that the prominent, then that's not. Okay, 9:4-10. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. He's the source of it, so it comes from him. So it's not different from him, but still, as it comes from him, he's still different from it. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. Because right? Without space, where will the wind go? We'll say that, you know, the wind is independent, moves around as it pleases. But it can only move around where there's space. If there's no space, wind doesn't move. Right? O son of Kunti, understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So Krishna can't be bound by it because he's the one doing it. He doesn't have to ever think that he is the mirror. We're the ones that may think like that. Right, so that's the point. Is he never that never happens to him? You know, it won't happen to him. Does that make sense? But he's only saying this because we become bound, and then we're wondering about his position. But he's beyond. He doesn't become bound. Right? Yes. Whatever it happens to be, but you know, into my nature, because he's the whole thing anyway. So how it mechanically happens, but into his nature means into his existence. I mean, he's everything, but then they may be separately arranged. But this is they come in; they're not separately situated. Right? Does that make sense? It's his Brahman, but it's also, it's like in Mahavishnu, when he breathes in, everything goes inside him. So it's within his form. But at the same time, everything he's expanded is also non-different from him. So one's always situated in the Lord. But it's just whether it's Brahman, Parma, or Bhagavan. You know. But then the problem is also what you're conscious of. Does that make sense? Everything is resting on Krishna's energy, right? Because we've read this before. It was given, you know, for the basis of other points. But as it goes out, each time you read it, it has more meaning, right? You understand the principle? So that's why in the Vedic things, and if the point is useful, they'll repeat it again and again. It's not like, oh, we already used that verse. We have to use something else. No, it because now you'll understand more from it. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the first time we went through this, it's like, you know, every sentence is something to discuss. And now it's you go through and no, it's just something that wasn't discussed before. That comes out from it. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, yeah.
Earlier here on page 19, there's verse 14:27, and then three verses, and then 14:27 again, just from a different...
Yeah, no, it's just kind of... Jiva Goswami does it all the time. You can have a whole run of the one Adhikarana. Then he gives all the sub-adhikarnas, and as he goes through, he'll be making this very different point from a different perspective, and then he'll quote the same verses as the authority, and then he makes another point different from the last, but uses the same verse like that, because the one verse says so many things, you know. So you're dealing with one point at a time. Does that make sense? Everything is resting on Krishna's energy. Lord Sri Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc. cannot be understood by material senses. Only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed. Right? Engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance. Right? So you have to have both of those. Because actually it can't be pure if it's not under proper guidance. But just in case people say, I'm following the regulations and activities of pure devotional service. But if it's not under proper guidance, then it won't be accepted. A little bit more about the
proper guidance.
Oh, okay. Okay, proper guidance means under means direction that's coming in the parampara, right? You know, that would be the sampradayic line. You know, so you know how Prabhupada is given, how the previous acharyas have given, like that. It's under proper guidance, because otherwise someone can take it and apply it in their own way. So they can say, oh, I'm not doing it for material benefit, I'm only doing it to please Krishna. You know, so sentiment is there, but if it's not authorized, then is it actually something to do? You know what I'm saying? Like that. In the Brahma Samhita 538, it is stated, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. Santasadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti. One can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, always within himself and outside of himself if one has developed the transcendental loving attitude towards him. Thus, for people in general, he is not visible. Here it is said that although he is all pervading, everywhere, present, he is not conceivable by the material senses. This is indicated here by the word Avyakta Murtina. But actually, although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him. As we have discussed in the seventh chapter, the entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two different energies. The superior spiritual energy and the inferior material energy. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy.
So the cosmic creation, is that only the material world or also the spiritual world?
The cosmic.
Cosmic creation.
Generally, when we say cosmic, then we generally mean both. You know, it just means God's creation. Yeah. Then there's the material creation, like that. So it's like, you know, so then you say like within the universe or within the material world. So, yeah. Or the material manifestation. But if we generally, the term cosmic means both. You know, the manifestation of the internal and the external potency. So here then, that means it's always situated in the Lord. So there's no question that the energy will be functioning without the Lord. Right, mm-hmm. So if the Lord's, you know, the Lord, because of his existence, everything else is existing, right? So because that independence, so that would be therefore a misunderstanding of this point would be applied in science, where they will say you have a star, you know, and it's putting out light, and then the star dies, but the light is still going on. But that would mean that the energy is independent. It can't be. So as a star is not light, the light is not there. It's simultaneous. You know what I'm saying? The current is running, and you have all the electricity, and you have the powerhouse. As soon as you turn off the powerhouse, the electricity stops. Right? It's simultaneous. It's not because it's connected. As soon as it's disconnected, it's not there anymore. Does that make sense? So the point is everything's connected to the Lord. That's why it functions. But we'll be thinking, no, it can function independently. So we can function independently. Material energy is functioning independently. So it'll come in science. Or God is there. He's created it, but now he's not involved in it. So it's running on its own. You know what I'm saying? All these come up because of not understanding this principle of God being everything, so everything's situated in him. Right? So you can get all kinds of varieties of misunderstandings from that. Yet one should not conclude that he has lost his personal existence. Yet one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence, right? Because the Mayavadis bring this up. And so, you know, as soon as you expand into everything, then there's no personal. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. For example, a king heads a government, which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Right? It means he exists, everything's going on because of him, but it's not that he has to be personally in all the things. They run anyway. If he wants, it means nobody can complain that he walked to another room of the palace, or walked into, you know, the office of somebody, or walked into the stables. You know, hey, you're the king, you can't walk in here. You know, no, he can walk wherever he likes. It's all his. So therefore, God is his energies, but he can appear anywhere you like because it's all his. Does that make sense? And Prabhupada says it's a crude example. Now, it gets the idea across. But, you know, similarly, all the manifestations that we see in everything that exists, both in this material world and in the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies. And as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam, he is everywhere present in his personal representation. The diffusion of his different energies. So that means the diffusion is also personal. So even when we're talking about the Brahman, impersonal in that interaction, we're not interacting with it, understanding its connection with the Lord. So it's impersonal. But it's still the qualities and everything are the Lord. So we're actually interacting with the Lord. But we're not recognizing as the Lord. How do you interact? Does that make sense?
Interacting with the Brahman is defined by interacting impersonally with the Lord.
Yeah, basically. You know, in other words, you're only interacting with the existence aspect of the Lord. So it exists, therefore you're interacting with it. I exist, therefore I interact.
Yes.
Right? What does this mean? That's it. Riti, although everything is expansion of his energy, the all-merciful Lord still descends personally in the material world in order to give his mercy to those who have misused their independence. Even though we haven't been good boy, still Krishna comes and is personally comes and therefore to try to uplift the living entity. Okay, Adhikarana 4. Sri Krishna himself, or his plenary portion, descends in this material world to keep in order his creation of material energy. Lessons 15 through 17. So 15. Sri Krishna himself, or his plenary portion, descends in this material world in different periods to keep in order his creation of material energy. Right? 4, 6 to 9. Right? Because, in other words, there has to be an application of endeavor. Because you're not dealing with the perfected beings. So therefore, they're not necessarily going to follow God's law. So then, by not following, it creates, you know, so many problems, it creates so many more problems, so sometimes it just gets too out of hand, so God will come to reestablish religion, right? Because religion means you're acting according to the actual nature of whatever it is you are interacting with, right? Because irreligion means you act with it inappropriately. Right? Does that make sense?
The same principle applied to, let's say, a businessman in his business.
Yes.
When he leaves for and thinks the business will run on its own.
Yeah.
It's because this is the Krishna.
Yeah, because why doesn't it work? He's one person and he has hundreds. Why can't hundreds of people do the work of the one? Why not?
It's his motivation.
It's his motivation, okay, but what is it? Is that the only difference? He's motivated, they're not. So if they got motivated, they would automatically be as good a business person as him.
He's got the vision.
That's the nature.
He has the nature, right? So that's the religion. In other words, he knows the religion of business. The others don't. They know the religion of an art of business. You know, how to buy things at a good price, or how to research things, or how to sell something, or how to make it look attractive. You know what I'm saying? Or how to get people to, you know, cooperate, you know, to work together to do their particular art. You understand? But he knows the nature of business. They don't. They know the nature of that art within business. So they can do that nicely. But because they don't know what the overall purpose is, then they may overemphasize the importance of their aspect. Right? The advertising guy, no, we have to advertise, we've got to put out more advertising. But then he's taking money from research and development. So they've advertised, everything's there, great, people start buying the stuff, but because you're developing no new products, now the next company comes out with a new product, you don't have one. So now what are you going to advertise? So they don't understand the balance.
So going back to this example of Krishna, Krishna has the nature of God, so he can come and establish, because he's got the nature of God.
Yes, well, yeah. He knows because he knows what the creation is, so he knows what it's for, how it works. Well, the living entities in the material world are looking at the creation, how they can use it for their own purpose. Not, you know, what's the overall purpose. Okay. So there'll always be trouble. So that's why then he himself or his plenary portion has to come to reestablish Dharma. Right? So that's Sankarshan. So the proper understanding, the proper activity there has to be.
What is the conception of the God is all merciful, that's why he comes to reestablish it personally even. So where is the conception of eternal damnation comes from? Like he's so bad, if you do something, one thing wrong,
there was a Brahmin who was a worshipper of the sun. And, but of the sun gods, then especially because there's 12, then he was specifically absorbed in Varuna, right? Because he's one of the 12 of 15. And he's at the same time, he's also the lord of the demons, right? Because the demons take shelter in the ocean, right? Because then the good guys can't see him, and so they don't bother them. So then he, at some point, came up with this idea that Varuna is the supreme, and the demons are the supreme. They're actually the good guys, and the demigods are always giving the demons trouble. So the demigods are the bad guys. So, you know, being a prominent personality, then at one point Vasishtha Muni, he had to basically, you know, set things straight and establish that what he was presenting didn't have much, you know, wasn't important. And because he wasn't about to give up his philosophy, then, you know, as is done, because Brahmins, there's no other punishment, you don't take their stuff or this or that, you just have to leave. So he had to leave the area of your civilized, you know, Vedic culture. So he had to go somewhere out on the edge, you know, out with the tribals somewhere. So then he went and started his, you know, this philosophy and all this and that, and it became very popular, and then this kind of aspect was going along. And but because in this then you have him and so many others, and so you have this multiplicity of gods, and then a descendant, you know, so then he went and preached to these particular descendants, means the, who came up later, you know, from that Kasyapa line, and then another descendant in that Kasyapa line. Then he decided that his father, who was also a priest, and he had so many deities and all that, and it also, I think, the sun god was the prominent, right? He was the major deity. And so, but he somehow, the kid wasn't that impressed with the idea. So he went out, I mean, when his father went out one day, he took a big stick and broke all the deities but the sun god deity. Then he put the stick in the sun god's hand. And then when his father came back, asked, what happened to these deities? You know, how are they all broken? Who broke them? And the son said, no, he broke them. You know, he's the big guy, you know, and you see, he's got the stick. His father said, no, but they're just stones, so they can't do that. So then he said, see, I told you, this is not God. So then he left home. He might have also been chased out, but you know, that part's finesse to this. You know? And so basically, he added the monotheistic element to this, but he actually kept the philosophy. Right? So then in that philosophy, the uniqueness of that was there, was the idea that, you know, there's the demons and the demigods. So the demons are the good guys and not the bad guys. So, and in here is that you have the creation, but someone else is controlling it. So it's not controlled by God himself. Well, nobody screamed or screeched or... Oh, just stuff came down. Oh, okay. And so, is this making any sense? Huh? You don't know these stories?
I've heard some.
Huh?
I've heard some.
You've never heard?
No, I've heard some.
Okay. So, that is... The first story was the one who started Zoroastrianism, and the second one was who started Judaism. Like that. So the philosophy is exactly the same. It's the same philosophy. It's just a monotheistic application of the philosophy. Does that make sense? So that's why then you have these elements that God's not part of the creation, the separate things, and all these different elements. This actually come from there. And then the derivatives of Judaism, your Christianity and your Islam, then they come from that. So then in this, that's where your eternal damnation comes from. Because it's not a Vedic concept. So it's come up from this particular line. You know what I'm saying? So Zoroaster, but they also say Zarathustra. Then he's come up with this idea, and then, you know, others have followed it, because, you know, it makes a lot of material, mundane sense. Right? It's just like, if someone does something bad, how long do you want them to suffer?
Forever.
Yeah, forever. So, if it works, you know, everybody's happy. Does that make sense? Right? So, it works. Then the common person, is because like this, let us say the person has done something wrong, and now he could be forgiven. Now, what he did wrong would be fun. And I didn't do that, though I wanted to, because of the reaction. Now, if I could do that and be redeemed, why won't I do it? So for that level of consciousness, then you have to say, no, they'll be eternally damned. Then I'll not do it. Yeah, you understand? You know, so therefore it's a whole... It's, and they apply it wherever and whenever they like, because sometimes you can do a lifetime of nonsense, but if you surrender, then you're fine. And at the same time, other times, is it doesn't matter what you do, you're not going to get out of it. So it's a bit arbitrary. You know what I'm saying? So it basically moves with the sentiment, because it's based on the sentiment.
It's suitable for me to know.
Yes, so therefore, you know, combine that with the story of, Kasyapa and the the tree and everything like that, then you get that class of people that have that accumulated a volume of sin, so that original sin is just that mundane consciousness, right? And so otherwise you complain, well, why do we have to suffer? They ate the apple, I didn't eat it, you know, so, you know, why am I have to suffer? It's because the mundane consciousness is still there. You give up the mundane consciousness, then you're not obliged to, you know, suffer.
Is there suffering? Yeah, I mean, if you give up mundane consciousness, a lot of suffering at least vaporizes on its own.
It all goes, because it's just a matter of how you see it.
Well, that's separation from Krishna. That's what...
No, but what it means, when we say is that you give up the material, means you've accepted Krishna.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So intense love of God in separation is not classified as suffering.
No, because it's in connection with God, so therefore it's...
So suffering is...
The point is, it's just like this. Let us say you have to do something you don't necessarily like to do, and it's what you have to do. Your boss just told you have to do it. So you go through, and it was tough. But let's say that exact same thing, that you do it because you know that it'll please someone who's very dear to you. It's not actually counted as suffering.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So the suffering isn't what you've gone through and what difficulties may be there, or trauma may be there in the physical, intellectual, or emotional platform. It's how the state of consciousness perceives that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, kids go out, run around, run through the bushes, get scratched, they get tired, they get hungry, they get thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they weren't playing, yes, they would say, that was a bad day.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But because it was fun, you understand? So it's how you interpret it. Yeah.
Well,
so that's why consciousness, you change the consciousness, where's the suffering?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mundane consciousness.
Because it looks the same. The thing is separation from Krishna looks like suffering, but it's still ecstasy. In the material world, because it's not connected to Krishna, you're separated from who's dear to you. It is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't realize that what you're attached to in who you're attached to is Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're God conscious, but in an unfavorable way, so it doesn't give the favorable result.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So favorable God consciousness gives a proper result. Unfavorable God consciousness doesn't. So the materialist, that's unfavorable God conscious. He's conscious of God, but it's for himself.
Yeah.
So how is it a relationship? But the other is favorable towards God, so God is pleased. So therefore, you're actually, you know, in ecstasy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But it's just like, let's say, you have good food. So is good food only one preparation? It's universally accepted that of all cuisines of the world, there's only one preparation out of all of them that's actually good food, and everything else is not.
Nope.
No, the point is the medium for good food can be so much variety, so therefore the sense of separation is one of the varieties of ecstasy. Does that make sense? Right? But when you remove it from God, you know, it means it becomes inimical towards God, so he's not part of it. Therefore, his happiness you're not experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You water the root, the leaves are happy. Why? Because the root's happy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if God's involved in your interaction, therefore, then he's happy, so therefore you're happy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like this. God being the supreme independent person who, you know, his only job is to have a good time, right? Now, if separation was actually bad, would he therefore come for a lifetime, you know, as a pastime, where the whole time he's in separation? Right? You know, saying, why would he come as Lord Chaitanya? Or why would he come as Ramachandra? And we could say, no, Ramachandra is doing all the good things. He's the most pious, so why is this bad stuff happening? But the point is the absorption is very great. You know what I'm saying? It's in connection with the Lord, therefore it's not bad.
And to really be pious, you would also need some bad things to happen.
To really be pious? No, that's on the material platform. There, it's on the spiritual platform, is you're already pious, so you don't have, bad doesn't need to happen. It's just, it's a matter of variety. You know what I'm saying? It's because the variety creates more taste in what you're already tasting. You know what I'm saying? Because you get so much into it, you just get into detail, you don't, the overall you miss. You know what I'm saying? So newness, there's something special in newness and freshness. So that means is that if everything's always expanding, there's that variety, then the next time that particular situation or that emotion or that activity is revisited, it's new, it's fresh. Not because you've forgotten, because it's developed. You know, it's not like the goldfish, you know, going this way in the glass, you know, and then turns around, hey, what's over there? And they go back and say, hey, check that out. No, it's not like that. So it just gets better, it's fresh, it's new. Yes?
Regarding tasting, how does a devotee distinguish his desire to taste Krishna consciousness, taste the holy name, as something pure or something contaminated by a desire to just be happy? How does he distinguish the proper understanding of the desire to taste and not?
Means is at Rupa Goswami's that formula he gives, that one is, you know, God conscious, and then it's favorable, right? So we discussed there is that all living entities means all humans are God conscious. It's just whether it's favorable or not. So, therefore, he is conscious. It's favorable towards Krishna, but it's free from karma and jnana. Right? So, therefore, one would have to understand what's the definition of karma and jnana. So, in other words, and it'll be all in the result. So the result of that endeavor, what actual physical result or physical, emotional, intellectual result it produces, who's that result for? So if it's for God, it's pure. If it's for God and us, it's mixed. If it's for us, it's material. So that's how one...
Sometimes it's difficult to tell. When, let's say, for example, when you're chanting and you're not having much of a taste, do you understand that's a problem? Right? I'm not, but I want a taste because that'll help my bhakti, and that means I'm becoming purified. But
no, but why do you want to help your bhakti?
Get closer to Krishna.
That and why do you want to get closer to Krishna?
My constitutional position, satisfy him.
Please. Okay, yes, so then that's the point, to please him. So that means the end line is proper.
So because I'm miserable and I want to...
So then that means that part's mixed. So ultimately it's in the right direction, but it's still mixed with other things. It's still mixed with, I'm miserable, I want to be freed from the miserableness, so that's gyan. You know, or I'm miserable and I want a comfortable situation.
It's like they work together, though, when you're in a certain stage of bhakti.
That's called sadhana bhakti. That means from shraddha up to bhava, that's what you're dealing with. Right? So now that the neophyte means up to nishta, then it's predominantly his, what facilities he wants and what experience he wants out of the... following the religious process. But God's included. But if it gets too prominent, then it becomes so covered that it's very hard to see the Krishna consciousness. But for the Madhyama, then it's basically, it's for Krishna. But one is very comfortable in certain, in those material situations that are in line with his conditioning. You know, and uncomfortable those who are not, which is fair enough, because you're supposed to engage your conditioning. But still that comfortableness from that, that's still that little bit that's left, you know, that's that aspect of jnana that's left. But it's very minimal. But still, if you're talking about pure devotion, it's still, there's a mix, right? You know what I'm saying? So if our focus and conscience is to do it for Krishna, then and not for ourselves, then that is considered pure devotional service. And only when those moments come up where there's other considerations, that would be where it's mixed. But when you get to the stage of bhava, then it's pure. But it's not pure and alloyed. So that's why one doesn't get into braja prema. You know, in other words, on the platform of bhava, basically speaking, what we're defining, it might be good enough to get into Vaikuntha. But to get into braj, it's not. So it has to be pure unalloyed. It means it has to be exclusively on Krishna, nothing else. Because Vaikuntha can be on Krishna, but also on liberation. But here it's so there's some aspect you want for yourself, but because what you want is in connection with the Lord, therefore it's not unfavorable. It's still pure devotional service. You know what I'm saying? But it's not pure unalloyed. So when we're defining pure devotional service, we mean technically, ultimately, pure unalloyed. But the stage of the Madhyam, it's pure devotional service. They're pure devotees.
So could we say the devotees praying for taste, please give me taste, he's really saying, please give me attraction, please give me love.
Yes, but somehow or another he's just working farther down the line, so it's not as direct, so it's not as efficient, and it's not as full. You know what I'm saying? But because it is connected to Krishna, it is devotional service, then the knowledge and detachment come, that these things come, and then gradually it happens.
The other day I was reading that Thakurai Das was praying to Lord Chaitanya to get a taste for the holy name.
Yes.
So I was thinking, well, he's already got a taste, so what's he praying for now?
More taste. It's so good. You know, it's like Rupa Goswami says, that it says, he wish he had millions of tongues, so now he's got millions of tongues, now he wants 10 million tongues. So, they hear that taste would mean, why is there taste? It means if we analyze it, because we're only catching that much. Means, in other words, how much can you say, if I'm dealing on a personal platform, when I say something, generally it'll be very personal, so it'll have that poetic element, right? How much will I deal with? Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it's like, let's say, the boy says to the girl, you're important to me, okay? So does he say, well, you know, I really want to be around you because, you know, whenever I'm around you, then I feel like this and that, and that's gets rid of this problem, then my job goes better, then I may have more facility, and then I'm really fired up because then I can get things and then interact with you and all this. Does he go on to say that? No, he just says, yeah, you're important to me. Does that make sense? So when Haridas Thakur says he's asking for taste, but the taste means it's coming from the direct interaction with Krishna. So in other words, the interaction with Krishna is so nice, he wants to be able to taste that again and again. So actually, he's asking for that. You know what I'm saying? We'll look at it, you know, from the, oh, we want taste, meaning that, you know, material world's not a good taste, this is a good taste, so there. Or taste means, you know, then I'm, you know, I'm situated nicely, because then I'm, you know, madhyam of madhyam. So then at that point, all the material desires go away. Because if I have a taste for Krishna, I'll give up all my material desires. Because then you're solid. That's a solid, you can say that's a solid madhyama. Like that. You know, and then from there, it'll turn into attachment. But Haridas Thakur already has attachment. So therefore, it's only a poetic referral to something within that personal interaction. While for us, it's actually a step in the process. But that's what's so beautiful about it, is the holy name is the process and is the goal. So that's the thing about devotional service, is it's the process, it's the goal. So depending on what I mean, it's also described, Prabhupada was describing. You have phala bhakti and you have upaya bhakti. So phala bhakti means the result, so it's prema. So, but you're still performing the same activities as on upaya bhakti, where you're doing it to get the result of prema. You know, so that's what's so nice. So therefore the element of taste, though it's part of the process of upaya bhakti, still when one's on the platform of phala bhakti, it's still the same principle. Is that okay? Is that okay? Okay. The Lord appears to establish the religious principles. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. Right? Because the rule is there because that's the nature of the thing you're dealing with. It's not the rule that makes it religious or irreligious. It's that the activity being done not according to the rule means you're dealing with whatever that aspect or that manifestation or that activity against its nature. Does that make sense? So that's why it's impious. Right? So people if you have the understanding of the principle, then you'll act always in a religious fashion. So not understanding the principle, you could act religiously because you follow the rules nicely. You're a very, pious person that follows rules, follows authority. So from that way, you're situated nicely, but you don't really know why you're doing things. You know, so it's sentimental because you don't know the philosophy. Right? Does that make sense? You know, but then it's okay, but then if the sentiment changes, you're not following. Right? Then if someone else is seeing that, okay, I'm doing this religious thing, it gets a result because religious always gives artha. Dharma gives artha. So I am doing this, I'm getting this result. Now, if I could get this result by a quicker, easier way, why would I follow the cumbersome method of religiosity? Right? So therefore, artha. Right? But artha still you have to take into big consideration as someone immediate, so they just use niti. Right? Does that make sense? So it appears you get the result, but then long term you don't. So you're dealing with some aspect of the religiousness of it, but not seeing in its bigger context. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The guy by niti is smoking his cigarette properly, right? But he's not missing the point that smoking the cigarette is bad for his health, right? And then also because its basis is simply his enjoyment, so therefore it's going to be an obstacle in spiritual understanding, right? So all these other levels he's missing. But, you know, he's lighting it properly, he stopped lighting the filter. You know, he's holding it properly. He's doing all the things so it burns properly and he gets through the whole cigarette. Like that. So you can say he is following the religion of the cigarette burning, you know, and his smoking it. But he's not following the religion of what a human being's supposed to ingest or do. You understand? So you're taking smaller and smaller and smaller. That's why you can say is everybody is God conscious. Because they're all following the rule, but how small they're going. So the point is then from here we get too pragmatic, so we drop Dharma. So when we drop Dharma, there's every chance that then you may perform some aspect right, and you're only getting a result because you're following that law. But you're not following the bigger laws, and so because of that, things go wrong. So then God has to come to reestablish it. So the Veda lays down the rules. The rules are only to indicate what's the principle or the nature at work. You know, like yesterday we were discussing that aspect. It was talking about it got into the nature of women. So then getting into that, that's a nature. So that means, okay, if in the association of women, the man, even if he's intelligent, you know, if he's alone, he might get distracted. Right? Huh? And we'll say that, this, that, and so, you know. But, and so, what conclusion might we come up with? Because we don't understand the principle at work here. Yeah, women are bad. Right? Okay? But the point is, does it ever say that the woman, she gets distracted if she's alone with the man? Does it ever mention that? Does the Shastra ever talk about a woman having to control her senses? No. Think about it. So what does that mean? That's not their problem. That's the man's problem. Right? Does your nose have a problem acting as a nose? No. But you have a problem what you use your nose for. You understand? You use your nose wrong. Whose fault is it? Your nose? No. So therefore, it's not the women's fault. You understand? Now, also, if we say fire and butter, which is more powerful? Fire or butter?
Fire.
Yeah. So these are principles that we're missing. So it's because the women are more powerful. Something is more powerful, you have to deal with more carefully. Right? If I got a match, that's one thing. You know, if I got a bomb, that's another thing. Right? You have to be more careful. Right? Yeah. And then if you have the match and the bomb, then you're really so, yeah, so you understand it. So it's a matter of how powerful it is. So therefore it's more powerful, you have to be more careful with it. Right? Does that make sense? So let's look at it, taking another thing, just to follow that line, on rules. Okay, how powerful is the Shudra compared to the other varnas?
Not powerful.
How many verses in Manu on the duties of a Shudra?
Few.
Yeah, I think there's two out of so many thousands, okay? And on Vaishyas, they're more powerful than Shudras, they get more verses. They get half a page. Right? Does that make sense? Now, then the Kshatriyas, they get three full chapters. Right? But then the rest of the book is for Brahmins. You understand? Because the more powerful, the more things that there are to consider. Does that make sense? You know, if I got a butter knife, do I have to tell you many things? You know?
What time is dinner?
Yeah, you know, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to warn you about anything. Yeah, I can say, yeah, don't stick the handle in your ear, you know, because it's got those little thin handles, you know, like that. You know, don't use that to clean your ear. You know, the other end you wouldn't be able to do it anyway, so there's no problem. You understand? But if the knife is sharp, I might say something, or that knife's too big, or this and that. You know, because it's sharp, you want to use a specific knife. Are there a variety of butter knives? Right? Because all they do is butter bread. It's not like there's, you know, yeah, you're doing a whole loaf, so you get out the big loaf. Lay all the ones down, pick up, you know, just take the thing, put it on there, and just like that. No, you don't. Yeah, it is. But, you know, you don't have, you know, then you have to have that special thing at the end to hold the bread, so you push. But then you have to, how hard, because then you might scrunch them together like that. So then only certain kinds of bread, or somebody with a delicate hand, like, he can spread on white bread, you know, the whole thing. You know, that's a delicate hand, you know. Yeah, he did it, but, you know, it's you know, it's German black bread. You know, so you could have used a shovel or whatever. You know, so like that. So it's like, so the thing is, but when it comes to knives that cut, how many varieties are there? Depending on exactly you're doing, so that what you're doing, it's small enough, you know, because you're trying to do some little paring work with a big knife like this, you cut your nose off, you know, like that. You know, so it's, you understand? So that's the thing is, the more they, so that's why there's so many things that are specifically talked about women, because they're so much more powerful. Right? But the problem is because that power, it's energy. It's always changing, always variety. It's inconsistent. So therefore, without that power being applied in a particular direction, there's no results. Does that make sense? So that means women without men aren't effective, even though they're more powerful. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
You know, you have this big machine. It's bigger than you. You know, the guy's out there with one in a mine there, and they got this machine. It's like three stories tall. It's monstrous. It's as big as this building. You know, so it's way more powerful than that. But it's still, without the man there, it doesn't work. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that you have to be careful with it. So all they're saying is that it's big. You know, if you have this little toy car, you know, you wind it up and then let it go and it runs across the room. Okay, but then, you know, you have a, you know, the family car. There's more rules. Does this make sense? So the point is that you understand the principle, then you understand how to deal. Right? But that's what one should be getting from these rules. Right? At the same time as then when you apply that, then these rules are the way you'd apply that principle. And even if you just properly apply the rule, it'll work. But if you don't understand the principle, something will go wrong because you're not actually dealing with the nature. So technically, it's impious.
it sometimes work the other way? If you just apply the rule, do you get the principle up sometimes?
That's how you do. You do it the other way. If you don't catch it from the principle, then you practice the rule. So that's why you do both. You hear and you practice. So the idea is that if you learn by hearing, that's the best. If not, by seeing. If not, by practicing. And that's kind of where we end the recommendation. Does that make sense? So that's why it's when Prabhupada uses the term, since we were just on, delicate subjects. When Prabhupada uses the term first class man is a remains a brahmachari, second class man gets married. He's not meaning that second class meaning he's less. It means he doesn't learn by hearing. He has to learn by being involved. So that's not as good as intelligence. But the point is that grihastha means he is using his intelligence, in the practical situation, and therefore it's progressive. So it's recommended. Does that make sense? Because it's understood very few will learn by hearing. Right? Does that make sense? So most is by getting involved. So in any case, the process of learning is hearing and applying. It's just a matter of whether you're applying directly involved or applying by not being involved. Right? In other words, the brahmachari hears about the nature of man and woman. Right? So therefore, the naistika understands there's nothing here for me to be involved in. Right? The upakurvana understands now that I know the science, now I'm comfortable to be involved and I will do it in a progressive way. So the one gets married, the one doesn't. Right? So a first class brahmachari makes a first class grihastha. But the first class brahmachari got married means he didn't learn by hearing. He had to get involved. So the other one is applying, but he's applying by his application of the man is not to get involved. Because opportunities are there, he doesn't get involved. The other one, opportunities are there, he gets involved. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of whether you're applying it, involved in it or not involved in it. Does that make sense? So you have all these different things that you have to know how they fit together. Because why is it here they're talking first class and here they're saying second class, and then, as you said later, as Manu will say, of all the ashrams, the grihastha is the best. Because they maintain all the others. You don't have brahmacharis if there's not grihasthas, right? Unless you're Vishwamitra, then you grow them on coconut trees. But other than that, then, grihasthas produce brahmacharis. Grihasthas retire and become vanaprastha sannyasis, like that. So they're the ones that make money. All occupation, only grihasthas have an occupation. So when you say someone's a Brahmin, like that, that means, generally means their occupation. You know what I'm saying? Because by ashram, everybody's supposed to be Brahman. So we're only talking occupation. Yeah. But because they're a grihastha, then we would say they're this. But if they were brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas, generally that's not referred to. Though you may say they're more inclined towards brahminical activities or management or this or that. But you don't really say that they're that. Because it's not an occupation, it's just service. You understand? So even the grihastha, let's say he's a businessman, but he comes to the temple, so he knows money, so he can help with the economics in the temple. But that's not being a businessman. That's rendering that service to Krishna in that category. Does that make sense? So you don't call him a Vaishya for that. But he maintains himself by being a Vaishya. You understand? So we have to know where these labels apply. Then it becomes very important. So if we understand that, it means an intellectual understanding, but we don't have realization. Then by practically applying it, and with that knowledge, then you get the realization. But the practice means it has to be with knowledge. So that's why we make a complaint about the smarta, because the smarta is following perfectly. That's not our complaint, that he's following perfectly. Our complaint is that he's not applying the knowledge, and it's not being done to please the Lord. But as far as being a Brahmin and being pious, that we accept hands down. Right? We don't have a complaint about there being a Brahmin. or being qualified. We have a complaint that for all that endeavor, they're not actually getting the result that Brahminical culture is meant for, which is realization of their relationship with God. Right? So that means is even following nicely, that's why we'll complain about, oh, it's just rules. This means it's just rules if you don't understand its connection. But if you understand the connection, it's not just rules. You know what I'm saying? So generally we say, oh, it's not rules because we're coming in from a pragmatic point of view or from a, you know, in other words, ignorance is there in the Vaishya and the Shudra. That's how you define them. You know, ignorance with passion, that's Vaishya, just ignorance as Shudra. So the element of being independent, whimsical, just getting done because that's the way I want it, that's the ignorance speaking of the Vaishya and the Shudra. Right? Because pragmatism is the Vaishya element. It's not a... Kshatriyas also, but they only that for a bigger picture. So they like things to be efficient, but they also like authority. So the Kshatriya wants, what's the most efficient way of applying authority? Well, Vaishya just, what's the most efficient way to get profit? It doesn't matter if it's authorized or not. You understand? That's how you can tell the difference. Because Kshatriyas are also very pragmatic. You come up with a plan, they don't think it's going to work, they don't buy it. You know, and so you can say, but it's Shastric. But the point is you have to apply Shastra practically. So it may appear sometimes that they're not so interested in the Shastra. No, they're interested in authority. They want to be worked. So therefore, for them, the perfection is authorized by Shastra, and it works efficiently. Then the Kshatriya will buy it. Right? Because it's not a question of issues. But then, if there's still issues about it, then you're dealing with Vaishyas or Shudras. Or Dvijabandhus. Does that make sense? You know, so these elements are that, yes.
Right, I was wondering, is it why
kings in the past had many wives because there was more brahmacharis? It's an interesting approach. And so you wanted that better quality of that, but also Vaishyas might have had a lot of wives, Shudras might have. But it's just that the king could, support them all in a, it's just like this. The guy has many wives, but they all live in, this one lives in this closet, that one lives in that little room, and that one lives in the pantry. You know, no one really talks about it. But, the king, he has many wives, and each has their own palace, and, each one has their own, whole world going on. You know, so it's like that. When Devaki was married, then she had 2,000 maidservants. So those are her personal assistants. It's not that her husband can, take them and do with them his. He's like, no, those are hers. Right? So why would her father give her 2,000? Right? Could you imagine having 2,000 maidservants? Where's the space? Where's the money? Where's the man? You imagine how good a manager you'd have to be? Say, oh, the Vedic women, this, that. Try managing 2,000 women. You know what I'm saying? 2,000 men, maybe, but 2,000 women. You know what I'm saying? That takes a queen. So that's a manager. Because they know manager, that's how occasionally they'll give some, the men are talking something, but it's not common, but occasionally they'll put in something really practical, and they'll all see, yes. Why would they do that? Because she does manage. She does know the political scene, the social scene. She does know all that. But she has her world within it. But because the principles are the same, if they're clever enough to see how to apply the principle in the household to the principle in the country, in other words, the country is just a bigger household, then they have something to say. So you do hear of ladies in history that are very good advisors. But it's rare because they generally don't take the principle and apply it across, just like most men don't apply it across either. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's like that. So it's not because of that. So you have somebody else, but you just hear about them because it's something more special. Like that. But otherwise the Vedic they would generally have the most. Like that. But it's for spiritual development, it's not recommended to have more than one wife. It's not that one can't have more if one can take care, it's that For spiritual, it's recommended only stick to one. So that's why then the Western concept coming from means we would say Abrahamic religions, but actually we should say the Zoroastric derivative religions. Then somehow or another they've caught on this principle but can't explain that's why. So therefore there's the principle that you only have one wife. But it's not so much that it's at the spiritual and all that. It's just something they practice. But it's right because it is. It is recommended. Does that make sense? So many times we were saying people are God conscious, but they just don't. It's not favorable, so it's not in line with authority and this and that. Does that make sense? They all become brahmacharis. Yeah, all Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, their children become brahmacharis. Grihasthas, Shudras, they generally, because they remain at home, they're always grihasthas. It's just a matter of whether they're bachelors or they're married. That's all.
It means that there's so many nashtik for brahmacharis, there's no one for the women to marry, so the men have to take many wives.
Oh, that was the point. Ah, now we got the question. Oh, okay. Because they have the facility and all that. It is an aspect, because generally you do always have more women born than men, like that, because of that element of the woman being more powerful. So that's the aspect. But it's one of the aspects. But it's others also may have more. Vaishyas, it's not uncommon to have many wives. You just don't hear. The scriptures that we deal with don't deal so much with Vaishyas. We deal with Brahmins and Kshatriyas. The scriptures that deal with Vaishyas and Shudras, they're a bit wild. we'll get into it. I mean, the Niti Shastra, most of the examples are about Vaishyas and Shudras. But the stories are about Kshatriyas and Brahmins. But the stories they give to point out Niti is generally always Vaishyas and Shudras. And most of the time, Vaishyas. So all the crazy, this one's running off with that one, and this one's doing this, that, they're all in those stories. Well, the kings and that, they all follow the rules, so, it's boring on that. And as far as gossip goes, then the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, there's no gossip. A great, great example on that. But if you want gossip, then you got to go for the Vaishyas and Shudras. That's where all the juice is, yeah. But the point is if dealing with one wife is so absorbing, so how much more qualified and powerful someone would have to be to deal with more than one? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's not, because the point is you can, it's not that the powerful man couldn't, but then that means that takes time out of sadhana and other things. Right? Because, he comes home and this wife's upset. You got to sit for so many hours to work it out. Like that. So that takes time. So now what if there were two like that? What if they were all like that? So there's no, there is no sadhana. You know what I'm saying? Because if you don't deal like that, the woman's not satisfied. She's not satisfied. There is no grihastha ashram. So then what's the meaning of the endeavor? So in other words, only deal with how many you have the ability to take care of. You know what I'm saying? So these kings are so powerful. It's like this. Is give an example of the kings of qualification. I don't want to create any problem here. Somehow in the field this will create problems. Yeah, no, so it's mentioned there that that's why that facility was there, because there would be more. Like that. Technically, those maidservants, they might be married, they might not, but if they're not married, technically the king is their husband. But only in connection with the queen. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, right there, that's 2,000 girls taken care of. You know what I'm saying? So, that's why Gandhari is not, she's not complaining about, what was his name? He was one of the Maharathas. He's a son of Dhritarashtra. He's not the 100 sons. He's another one. Because he was the son of a maidservant. But because he's in that family, he was trained in everything and all that, but he couldn't sit on the throne.
Vidur?
No, no, no. Vidur is because he's the generation before.
Yuyutsu,
yeah. So therefore, he survived the battle. He's one of the seven that survived. You know? So then he, therefore, went back. He took care of Gandhari, but he didn't sit on the throne. So that was... Okay, well, thank you. Yes?
I always understood... The Prabhupada says, a man's not satisfied sexually with one woman, so he would marry many. I don't know if that means all men or...
No, well, it's not so much from that, because the point is the sexual only comes if the woman is pleased. So that means then the guy has to know how to please. Maybe that's why you're going to ask this question. Okay, here's the thing, is that you're talking about that modern man, okay, the wife's there, then at the office, you know, then he goes out to the nightclub, and then like this and that, so, but he can't deal with all of them together at once. The king is, there is a time in the evening after he first comes back into the palace, you know, after his afternoon duties of, you know, checking the army and everything like that. Then he sits with all the queens. Same room, all together. And he has to be able to say something about them. You know, interact and say something about each one that's unique to themselves. In front of the other, that the other ones will appreciate that's her uniqueness. But you pointed out, you know, their uniqueness, so they're satisfied. And at the same time, being queens, they're not simple village girls. It would have to, there would have to be variety. You wouldn't be able to use the same line every time. Now, what kind of man could do that? So that's what Prabhupada's talking about there. But this other is just, he's not satisfied, but he doesn't understand. So he's not satisfied, meaning it's not the natural position, it's the contaminated position. Because the point is if he knows how to deal with the woman, then whatever he's looking for, that will be manifest. But you have to know what to put into it to get out. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're taking the car through some very heavy, you know, terrain and that. If you don't know how to work with the gears and the steering and all that and how the things will slide and all those different things, you won't get what you're looking for. But you can't blame the car. That's the point, is the men will blame the woman, but it's that they don't know how to get out of the nature of woman what they're looking for. So therefore, they're not satisfied, therefore they go around and think it's a different woman, that's why I'll be satisfied. No, you can be satisfied with the same, you just know how to get that. So in other words, the new lady, it's that he's acting properly, so he's getting, but he doesn't know how to apply that into a longer term, because he only knows a couple of tricks. You know, so that's why the one night stand thing, because you only have one line. It's not going to work a second night. You know, so that's why it goes like that. But the point is the Vedic concept, you understand the principle has unlimited detail. So you'd have to be very intelligent to understand the principle and then how to apply the detail so that each time you can come up with a new line. And if you come up with a new line, that's going to work on your wife every time. So that's so we're talking about a kind of qualification that is not conceived of in the modern. Because the point is that the guy who has, you know, really has his way with the women, you don't hear about him having a stable relationship. His lines only work when he's just trying to get a specific aspect. Right? Does that make sense? He never has. But then if you take the theme further, then if one of those women catches his attention, he absolutely has no idea what to do. Wouldn't have a clue. Even though he's the man and he can say everything, the guy's, oh, he shouldn't have said that, or he shouldn't have done this. You know. He has no idea what to do. Why? Because he's never tried to apply it into that, to that world of possession. Because The other women, there's no possession. That's why it appears light and unencumbering. But when you have possession, then that means then you don't get it right. You have problems. Because you say the wrong line to that girl, she disappears. Hey, there's another one at the other table. You know? And then after that, you go home. But when there's possession, you know, it's not a matter of you can go home. You are home. You know what I'm saying? So it just means the stakes are higher. That means the intensity is greater. That means the opportunity for getting something from it is so much more. Because it's intensity that creates the greater experience. So that means the better the knowledge, the better the focus, the better the endeavor, the greater the intensity, the greater the result. So that's the science that the Vedas give, that the modern doesn't talk about. They don't get into that. They just say it's more technically right or this. They don't understand that you're still dealing with the personal aspect. You're still dealing with God. You're still dealing with relationship. You're just applying it to a certain aspect of dead matter or to money or to something else, making a friend. Okay. Yes.
It's about what I'm hearing is about being willing to meet a certain level of commitment and responsibility.
Yes. Yes.
Being willing to meet that level.
Yes, because commitment means that if the men like women because of variety, but that means then if you want variety, you have to offer variety. In other words, the man may not come up with as much variety as a woman, but if he's not offering variety, she won't either. Right? In other words, he does the same thing, says the same line, does the same thing, day in, day out, doesn't change. She cooks the same thing, wears the same thing, says the same thing. But if he's able to create that freshness, she'll create even more freshness. You know, in other words, I'm just saying, she'll create more than he will, but he has to start it. You know what I'm saying? You know, the dogs are going to jump all over the lawn and run around and do all the things, but you first have to throw the stick. You know, you just sit there. It just sits there. You throw the... You know, then it's all, you know, that's all happening. So that's the whole point is that the man doesn't create that environment. I mean, it's what he's looking for if he doesn't deal in that. Just like, let's say I want profit. I want money. I have to put in money. But the point is that you call profit because you get back more than you put in. Does that make sense? So whatever endeavor the man puts in, the woman will give back more. Right? But now that it's more, what do you do with more profit? You reinvest. So that means your next endeavor has to have more investment in it than you get. You understand? But the man thinks, no, I did that once and then eternally I'll get that same. No, I put in 1 rupee, I'll get back 2 rupees. So it's not that, well, I'll just keep on one of these days, I'll get 1,000,000 rupees. No, you still only get 1 rupee, 2 rupees out of it. In a sense, so that's the difficulty, is that these principles that will go on and will sit in, you know, seminars and boardrooms and see power presentations and this and that, but nobody knows how to take that home and apply it in a relationship. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same thing. You don't reinvest in the business, it dies. So you don't reinvest in the relationship, it dies. You know? You don't deal nicely with your people at work, they don't deal nicely with you. You don't deal nicely with the wife, she doesn't deal nicely with you. You talk rough, she talks rough. You talk nice, she talks nice. You think about her, she'll think about you. You think about you, she'll think about her. It's direct. It's always fun. You sit down, the man comes and says, you know, yeah, I have these problems, my wife does this, 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 this. Like that. And you go, okay, cool. Then he goes, and you call the wife, you know, then what it is. And then she'll say exactly all those things about him. And then in that, you can understand as he does that, that's why she responds like that. And then you tell the man, well, if you want to respond, you have to do like this. It's kind of like, no, that's her duty to do it. No, it's not. That's just the way it works. You know? So then it's, you know, and some try it, and it's like, wow. You know? So it's science. So when we're talking here about religion, means something has a nature. You act according to what the Shastra says you should do. That's because what you're doing is according to the nature. So you should learn the rule because that's necessary for the skill. Right? But actually it's the principle behind it that's more important. right? Just to make it work. And ultimately, the principle behind that, which is God. So there's God, there's the principle of the creation, and then there's the detail of the creation. Right? So now, since we don't know God and don't know his principles, therefore we start with the rules. But we're supposed to be trying, by applying, what's behind this? How is it connected to Krishna? What is the principle behind this that makes it always work? By doing that, then that's progressive. So that's what's being offered, right? And this is Bhagavad Gita. You know? Like that. So that means immediately Prabhupada was giving this. This is written in the 50s. And after Prabhupada wrote his first Bhagavad Gita, he was trying to publish in the 50s. He wrote this analysis of it. So that means it was already planned for, you know, that this would be there. So everything is offered. So it's already given. But somehow or another, we don't take it. You know, we accept, you know, based the fundamental philosophy. But when it comes down to the details of how that applies in the culture, and so therefore we know how religion works, how nature works. You know, because religion doesn't change just because we don't believe in it. It's not like that. Oh, people aren't religious. No, you still have to do it the right way. You know, whether you're a demon or you know, very devout, the car still works in the same way. You know, so if you don't know the science, it just doesn't work. So that's what the Vedas are giving. But the point is the modern, they want to learn the techniques simply to get their profit, and they don't care for more than that. For us, we're only using the techniques because that's engaging the senses in Krishna's service. So we want to know what the principles are so we know how to better serve Krishna. And we want to know how Krishna is always involved so we can be more Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll get here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shri Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki
Jai
Janita Gaur